Well, good to see everyone is out this evening. We are going to start a new study tonight. We're going to look at the book of Job, and I'm going to change gears, formats, whatever, in a number of different ways tonight. For one, we've been looking at the idea of the cults. We spent a good deal of time on that, looking at those three major cults, and really looking at it, trying to do an overview of it, both from a historical, doctrinal, etc. point of view. Not going to rehash all of that, I promise, but we have spent some time on that. Now tonight, we're going to go back to, and let me say this, I meant to say this about it, and many times, since we were talking about their doctrine, or their views, we weren't finding that in the Bible, because obviously it is something that's foreign to the Bible. So tonight we're going to return to a study, and we're going to look at an Old Testament book, the book of Job. We're going to begin a study. We're not going to look at a verse-by-verse study. It is going to be, as you can tell above me, a basic overview of the book. Now, what I mean by that is, and this is the way I will approach it, I will look at it tonight. I'll kind of look at the setting of the book, what the book is generally about, that kind of thing. And then I want to look at, more than anything else, I want to single out some doctrinal positions, views, etc. within the book, while keeping it in the scope of the basic structure of the book. That will become more apparent as we get into the later lessons. I'm also tonight going to begin, and I will throughout this particular study, we'll use the PowerPoint, but I'm going to use it more like might use overhead charts, back when I used to do overhead projection charts, etc. And I'm going to do it from the standpoint of an outline. And so, Edward, I'm going to ask for your help right there. And I want you to, that first page on the left there, yeah, just that one. We'll start with that one. I don't know if we'll get through that tonight or not, but if we do, we get real lucky, we maybe even go to the second one. But each week I'm going to have an outline of the lesson. You can kind of follow along. I've left it such that, and as you're getting this, you'll see, it'll be a point-by-point outline. When I did the survey, several of you remember that, when I did the survey, I asked, you know, if you wanted an outline, how people felt about that. There was enough of a consensus. Some of you, it wasn't important to you, but it was enough of a consensus that went ahead and decided to do the outline. We'll be doing that on Sunday evenings. And I also asked you what kind of outline you prefer. And while there was somewhat of a mixture, most of you leaned toward the traditional outline, the point-by-point, you know, Roman numeral 1A, 1-2, that kind of outline, and as opposed to maybe questions or bullet points or whatever it might be. So we'll do it from that fashion. And this book and this study will lend itself to using an outline, and I'm trying to, hopefully I left enough space on there as we go through the outline. I may fill in with some more details and so forth, and I'll leave you enough room to take notes or jot a note or two down in the margins if you'd like to do that. So having said all of that, and most of you have one by now, you can see, we'll get into the actual lesson. Now, if you'll notice in the introduction part, and if you've not got your outline, you will shortly. If you'll notice in the introductory part, there are some, as I call them, classic questions about the book of Job. Matter of fact, take your Bibles and open to the book of Job. We're going to spend some time in the Bible tonight. But there's some classic questions about Job. Job is a very, in many respects, strange book to some. It is different. There are things about it that are different from any other. We're going to explore those things. But there are some questions that immediately present themselves. For example, you can see the classic questions. Who was this guy? Long regarded as, obviously, a canonical book. For those of you in the Wednesday night study, there's no doubting the canonicity of the book of Job. It is not doubted. It was used by the Jews from the beginning of its appearance, which was considerable. It was not doubted by Jesus. It is authenticated in the New Testament. No doubt about it. But who was he? There is even question. You can see I asked the question from the beginning. Was he a Gentile? There are some reasons to suspect he might have been. And I'll tell you those as we get into the study. Was he a Jew? Now, if he's a Jew, I'm talking about, of course, after God singles out Abraham and establishes his covenant with those Semitic people known as, that we have come to know as Jews. An equal question is, when did he live? While most books, if you're looking in my Bible, the same openings, the book of Esther, there are things within the book of Esther from chapter 1 that immediately enable you to pinpoint the book right down to the century and even to the reign of King Ahasuerus. It's very simple, very easy to do that. But when you get in the book of Job, there are things, some would say, all over the place, and a lot of different reasons to suspect that he is very ancient, very new in that sense, very late Old Testament, very old Testament, all of that kind of thing. So when did he live? Was he a contemporary of Abraham? Did he come before Abraham, pre-Abraham? Was he after Abraham, post-Abraham? And equal to that, again, who was he? When did he live? Is where did the story take place? Now, Ed read for us a moment ago, and you can look in chapter 1 and verse 1, there was a man in the land of Uz. That doesn't help you a whole lot, as we'll see in just a moment. There was a man in the land of Uz. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But to many, it's not very helpful. And so the question becomes, is Uz really probably more properly pronounced Uz? But that sounds nasty to me, so I'm not going to call it that. So the land of Uz, was it in Greater Palestine? I'll explain what I mean by that. Was it in Mesopotamia? I'll talk about what I mean there. The Arabian Peninsula. No one doubts this is in the Middle East, but exactly where in the Middle East? Well, I'll say no one doubts. There is some doubt even that it's in the Middle East, but few do. And maybe more important than all of that, once we get past all of that, we're going to look at all that tonight. We'll try to answer those questions from, and it will be an interesting study, I hope, if nothing else. But then as we get further into the book, we won't touch it tonight, but as we get into the book, we'll deal with the classic biblical story. Now, Ed read the very setting of the story. This rich man, obviously rich, with some position. But it's a classic story. TJ touched upon the story this morning. Coincidentally, I guess, but touched upon the story this morning as he was introducing the idea of giving and all of that. But it's a story of trials, as TJ read this morning. It's a story of the trials of a man by Satan himself. He's on trial with Satan, and his faith is doubted by Satan, etc. So Satan is responsible for a lot of the things that happen in the book. But it's not only that, because it's a very complex story. There are the trials of the man as he sits with and really is cross-examined or put on trial by his companions, his friends. There are first the three friends that come to visit him, and then later in the book, an admittedly younger man that speaks up and basically says, "I've heard enough of you, Job," and so he just begins to attack him. So there are those companions that have come to comfort him, but that comforting turns into a real trial, and they put him on trial. But perhaps most complex of all is the fact that the story very definitely begins in chapter 1 with God presenting Job as the best of the best. And we're going to look at that. We'll get into that next Sunday night. But God presents him as the best of the best, and yet by the time you finish the book, 40 chapters, some odd chapters later, God himself has put Job on trial. And then you begin to look at it and you say, well, maybe that was the point all along. Maybe more so than the trial by Satan, or the testing by Satan, if you will. The trial or testing or cross-examination by his companions and his friends, it had to do with the test by God or the trial by God all along. And so it is a very complex story. You read the description, and I'll say this and then I'll leave that part of it and get into the setting of the book. But you read the description of Job that Ed read for us a moment ago, and the description is one of an exemplary man. I mean, perfect, etc. It reminds you of Noah was perfect in his generations and that kind of thing. And yet, by the time you get to the end of the book, you have God addressing Job in the sense of, Job, you're not perfect. and here's what's wrong with you. And maybe it begins to point to the fact that that was the reason for it all along. So it is an extremely complex book. When I gave the survey, I asked for suggestions and so forth. This one came up a couple of times. Wanted to look at the book of Job, wanted to talk about the book of Job, and there were some questions about it. So I thought it was a good place to begin, and I chose that. I thought that was a good suggestion for a study, and in fact, I welcome all those kinds of suggestions. So we'll take a look at this. Now, in the end, you have a very spiritual man. You can see at the end of the introduction here. You have a spiritual man, and it's his contemplation. It's what he's thinking. And if you want to understand the book, and if you really want to see the value of the book, you try to crawl into his head in this book. And what you find is a deep soul searching of a righteous man. And I don't have a problem calling him such, but it's a deep soul searching that he does. And there are, growing out of that, some very deep doctrinal questions that are pertinent for us today. They are just as relevant to us today as they were for him in his day. They've been answered to a degree for us by the New Testament, etc. But nonetheless, they're very deep doctrinal questions. And so this is not a simple book, run through it, read it in an afternoon's time, and boy, I know everything about Job. It's just not that kind of study. It is the story, maybe for us, and the greatest value we can get as Christians, and perhaps why it's still here for us, is that you see the improvement. You have a good man, not good enough, none of us ever are. But you have a good man, and you see his improvement in the book. You see the ultimate profit that he gains from this whole ordeal, I'm calling it, that he goes through. And you see the ultimate profit, especially in his meeting, and I'll say it like that, call it that, but his meeting with God near the end of the book. So we'll look at all of that. We're going to contemplate all of that. That's a lot. That's a huge undertaking if you're going to try to explore all that. But I'm going to give it a best shot at doing an overview of that anyway. I probably won't look at every nuance of the book, certainly. And I won't answer every question, but do the best to do a basic overview of it. Now, let's go back to some of those classic questions, the setting of the book. You can see at the bottom of your outline on page 1, numerous questions surround the book of Job, obviously. Quite possibly, many would suggest, quite possibly aside from the opening chapters of Genesis, and I mean Genesis 1 through 10, or the first part of chapter 11 especially. Except for that time, Job concerns or looks at or is set in the oldest time in the Bible. Now that's possible. We're going to talk about I'll at least tell you why I believe what I believe, and I'll look at it and I'll say, is he before Abraham, afterwards, and so forth, and that'll tell us. But many would suggest that indeed he's ancient, he comes well before Abraham, and that's the setting of the book. So let's ask the question, who was he, and when did he live? And I'll start it by, there we go, when did Job live? And I'll do a summary here, but let's go through the outline, you have it before you. These two questions, who was he and when did he live, are really interrelated questions. Because if you answer one, you basically answer the other. And I'll point out why I say that. When did he live? So let's ask that question first. It may be the more valid question to begin. Was he a contemporary of Abraham? Did he come before him? Did he come after him, etc.? And in turn, you ask, was he Gentile or Jew? And you have to ask that. If you're thinking in terms of the first few verses, you'll have to ask the question, was he Gentile or Jew, depending on your question, did he come before or after Abraham? Now, if you want to pick up books and look at where scholars place him, they put him everywhere. I mean, he's in the patriarchal age, before and after Abraham. He's with the Jews in Egypt in captivity and slavery, some having been a contemporary with Moses, even a Gentile contemporary of Moses that is in the employment, believe it or not, this is a fairly popular view, in the employment of Pharaoh. And he's one of Pharaoh's wise men. Some would put him as late as David or Solomon, and others even in the time of the Babylonian captivity. And there's reason for that. Some would even tell you, if you look at the previous book of Esther, that he lived in their time under Ahasuerus and Esther. Now, what's most likely? And what does the book really tell us? Well, look at chapter 1 again for a moment. If you were listening when Ed read this a moment ago, it said something very important. And this begins to make you or force you to answer a number of questions. Verse 5, we single it out. Because verse 5 tells us, it was so, when the days of their feasting was gone about, that Job sent, and notice, the King James says it like this, and sanctified them. And he rose up early in the morning, and he offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. Now the language here, the verbiage here especially, is that Job is a priest. The very fact that he, quote unquote, sanctified them, and he offered the burnt offerings, would point to the fact that Job is the acting priest for at least his family, or really for his community. It's talking about his servants and so forth, and it is looking at this setting much like Abraham. If you think in terms of Abraham, and Abraham is the patriarch of that society, and it's not just, you know, his wife and his son, Isaac or Ishmael or whatever, it's the whole community. It's all those servants and so forth that are with Abraham, and originally even Lot. Well, Job is acting like that. And there's every indication here that Job is a patriarch, which means he's the father ruler, he's the leader of the community. It's almost a tribal setting with him as, you know, the leader, that kind of thing. But also serving as priest. Now, that begins immediately to suggest to you that either Job comes well before Abraham, or certainly in the time of Abraham, or shortly thereafter, or if you want to make him, you know, we start saying Gentile or Jew, okay, does he come later than Abraham? Does he even come in the time of the Jews? All these other suggestions like the time of the judges or David or Solomon or whatever. Well, if he's a priest, then he's got to be a Levite. And there certainly is nothing in the book that indicates remotely that he's practicing the law of Moses. But he's got to be a Levite, or he's not a valid priest, or he's got to be a Gentile priest in the vein of Melchizedek. Now, you don't know just strictly by looking at verse 5, but it does, depending on how you take verse 5, start forcing you into one of several positions. Again, he's acting as a priest, so he's either in the vein of Melchizedek, in the patriarchal period, like Melchizedek, or he's a Levite in the time of Moses, something like that. So it starts pushing you in one or more of those. Well, can you pinpoint any more? Can you pinpoint it to anything else that is said to his being one or the other? Pre-Abraham, post-Abraham, and we'd focus on that to start trying to decide who he was. I think you can. I want you to turn to chapter 5, and let's start discussing, to begin with, how old he was. There's not a lot that is said. It doesn't begin by telling you Job was 36 years old when this ordeal took place. But there are two indications in the book of how old he is. If you look at chapter 5, you're already into, and this is the setting of the book, you're into the time when the friends began to speak up. And here sits Job, and we all know the story. Here sits Job. He's lost everything. He's covered in boils from head to foot. And the natural question is why? You know, what has he done? And that's the assumption everybody makes in the book. All of his friends make the assumption, you've done something. What is it? And Job will start contending, no, I didn't do anything. I was rocking along and doing everything like I was supposed to do, and all of this stuff happened. Now, that's overly simplified, but that really is the way the book unfolds. Well, if you notice Eliphaz in chapter 4 and verse 1, his companion Eliphaz the Temanite, many presume to be the oldest because he speaks first. I don't think that's all that important, but nonetheless, Eliphaz the Temanite begins to speak. And we'll get into all of these speeches and so forth, but if you notice as he chastens Job, addresses Job's issue, whatever, he says down in chapter 5 and verse 26, he says to Job, "You shall come to your grave in a full age, like as a shock of corn comes in his season," or comes in his season. Now, when you look at that, you might say, well, he didn't say anything. Oh, yeah, he said a lot. If he's speaking from the standpoint And this would be the natural presumption. Job has lost everything. He's covered in boils from head to foot. He's in the worst physical condition anybody has probably ever seen. And the natural assumption would be he's at death's door. And they are assuming God is chastening you and is killing you because you, and this will be their assumption, because you won't admit that you've sinned. Now, what Eliphaz, if he's assuming that, again, these are a lot of ifs, but if he's assuming that, and most suppose that that is natural, he's looking at Job and he's saying, even if you die today, you die, notice the phrase, a full age. Now what that means is this, he's not young. There are other indications to tell you that. We can go back to chapter 1, we can see the fact that he's got grown children who are in their own houses. So he's not a young guy. We're not talking about a 25, 30-year-old man here. We're most probably talking about someone who at the very least, most would suppose, at the very least is in his upwards in his 50s, perhaps 60s. And by what Eliphaz says, may well be older than that. In other words, if he's that old, and as old as we'll come to see in just a moment, or that people live to anyway, then what Eliphaz is suggesting is you've lived a full life. If this is the end of your life, you've lived a full life anyway. Now, put that together with, go with me to chapter 42, the very end of the book, when the book summarizes or closes out. Notice what it tells us in chapter 42 and down in verse 16. This very last thing that's said. After it was all over, after this lived Job 140 years. Now, what I'm saying is this. If at the very least he's in his 50s, and after it's over he lives 140 years, it puts him in his 190s when he dies. If he's a full age, and a good, like many would say today, you've lived to a ripe old age. We don't say that to people, even in their 50s, in our day. We start looking at people once they get up past their 60s, 70s, that kind of thing, and we're saying to them, you're ripe. You're a ripe old age. And anything you live from here is just, bonus. It's gravy, so to speak. Now, what I'm getting at is this. If he's in his 50s, that makes him in his 190s when he dies. 60s, it puts him in his 200s. 70s, he's over 210. And you see the point there. There's an ancient note in a Septuagint version, which doesn't mean anything, okay? Except that it's an ancient note. And the ancient note, and it even found its way into the Septuagint translation, again, those Wednesday night people, you'll readily know what we're talking about there. But there was an ancient note that said, tradition had it, that he was 100 when this happened to him, and that would not be far-fetched. In other words, he's 100 years old, which in his day would make him just reaching middle age. It would be comparable to, say, a person in their 40s today. He's grown, he's lived some time or whatever. But that note says he's 100, and if that's so, he's 240 when he dies. Now, why did I go through all that? Why say all of that? Well, it's important. Because if you're looking at when he lived, people don't live over the age of 200. We don't see anybody live past the age of 200 after Terah. That's Abraham's father. He lives to 205, and that's the oldest person after Abraham dies, what I think it's 175. And then people start drastically falls off after that, so that by the time of Moses, four generations from Abraham, there is that very famous Psalm 90 that says, 70 is a good age, and if by reason of strength, 70. So 60, 70 years old. Now, the point is, we're talking about a man who at the very least lives to be around 200 years old and quite possibly lives much older than that. Because as some look at this, go back again to chapter 5, and you listen to what Eliphaz says, and again I'm making that comparison, if that note was right, and if 100, which would make it 40% of his life, and for us today, 100-year-old person, you'd be 40 in your 40s. You know, a little mathematical there. But the point being, if all that's so, he easily, Eliphaz easily could be looking at Job at 100, making him 250. Or if he's at a ripe old age, Job can well be into even his hundreds. And that's not far-fetched. It's not far-fetched from what's said in the book. You've lived to a ripe old age by this time, by the time of the ordeal, and he lives 140 more years after. That's not far-fetched. And it's not far-fetched from the ages. Go with me to Genesis chapter 11 for a moment. And when you get to Genesis chapter 11, and you look all down about verse 10, the Tower of Babel has just happened. No, I don't want to go next. In chapter 11 and verse 10, the Tower of Babel has just happened. But it gives us, Moses goes back and gives us the generations. It picks up with Shem, if you'll notice. And he will come down to talking about, if you'll note down in verse, you lost it there for a minute. But when he talks about Peleg, down in verse 18, when he comes down there, he will start talking about the earth being divided in his time. So you've got this period here. You've got this generation, or these generations, genealogy. And if you add up the ages, what you find here is past the time of Shem, you begin to see Shem lived 6, and you can add this very quickly for yourself, but Shem lived to age 602, Eber 464, Reu, as it gets down closer to the time of Abraham, 239, and as I've already said, Terah lived to 205. Now, why am I saying all of that? Because it puts, given that age of Job that's at least indicated in the book, it puts Job back before Abraham, square in the middle of this generation, and more in the time of, say, Terah at the youngest, or up to Reu and Peleg and those generations at the latest. Now, if that's so, then that begins to answer for you when he lived and who he was. He was most probably, He was most probably not someone who came after Abraham, and not even a contemporary of Abraham, but most probably he is a patriarch living before Abraham, somewhere between Babel and Abraham. We don't know exactly when, and we don't know if it, I would assume on the closer end to Abraham than Babel, because the indication, again, is maybe 250 years, something like that, the maximum. But he's not later than Abraham. And he's not a contemporary of Abraham. Now, if all that's so, and that's a lot of ifs, and you can decide for yourself if you believe all that and if it's all wet or whatever. But if all that's so, then what do you have before you? You got the oldest story. In other words, what you have, you've got Genesis 1 through 11, and the longest story about anybody you've got is Noah. And you don't really have anything but one long story about a year out of his life. And it doesn't tell you anything much other than that God came and said, "You're the only good guy, and I'm going to destroy everybody else," and he did. But what you have in Job is a rich book from the oldest times. It doesn't just tell you an event. In other words, it doesn't just tell you what happened. A battle took place. The world got destroyed. It tells you, more importantly for us today, how they thought. It tells you what ancient people, we don't even know this kind of thing about Abraham. I mean, look at what you know about Abraham. God called Abraham, sent him into a foreign land. It began to set about, and the events we discuss in the life of Abraham are how he got this son and how he got that son and he had these sons, etc., and that's it. But it doesn't have long discourses on Abraham sitting around and contemplating why God does what he does, or the doctrinal positions that ancient people took. And we get sometimes, we think in terms, a lot of times, human beings do, and even Christians, you'll hear Christians making this kind of statement. I think we think so much in terms of what the New Testament says about that they lived in shadows and they didn't understand, and all of this kind of thing, that people get in their heads that these were a bunch of stupid people. You know, they were righteous people and religious people, but they just really didn't know much. There wasn't a whole lot of communication with God. There wasn't a big Bible like we have, you know, with all these books and all these doctrines. And so they just didn't know a lot. And they kind of walked around and wondered, who is God? What's He all about? And, you know, they just didn't think very deeply about it. And then there's the book of Job. And when you look at the book of Job, you say, wow. And as you dig into it and you listen to how these three, not just Job, mind you, but these three and then later four individuals, you listen to them cross-examine Job or challenge Job or whatever, and their thinking is deep. Even if it's wrong, all the points they make aren't wrong. Their conclusions might be, but all their points are not. And it's deep thinking. And when you listen to Job, and you listen to how and he talks about all kinds of things. Remember, he's defending himself. So he's going to get into all kinds of subjects. I mean, his personal life, his contemplations of God. He's going to talk about his everyday actions, how he conducts himself with regard to this incident or that incident or this situation or that situation, even down to I'm married and to conduct myself as a faithful husband, this is what I do. You know, I mean, there's all of that. There's just nothing else like it. When you begin to look at the opening chapters of the Bible, you get history and you get all of those facts that present to us a foundation of the New Testament. It's all important. I mean, we need all of that. But then there's the book of Job. You don't get anything like the book of Job, if you stop and think about it. You don't really get anything like Job until you hit Psalms. And Psalms is roughly 1000 B.C., or quite possibly 1500 or more years after the book of Job. So what you've got here is an ancient book filled with all of that as Job begins to contemplate his position before God. Why did all of this happen? Now, there are some indications. Let me run through this last point, and then I'm going to close with that because I don't want to open up the next bigger point. There are some indications, and many have pointed to this. In fact, someone did at the back of the building this morning. But no, there are indications also because of the namesakes. There are a lot of people, as you go through the book, you get Eliphaz the Temanite and all of this kind of thing. And people begin to look at that and they say, well, then that must mean, as you look at this, that Job and his companions all come much later than Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Esau and all their descendants, because the names of the places where they come from and all of that reflects people or namesakes that came back in Abraham's time. And this is why, and this is the main argument, understand, for why people place the book of Job post-Abraham, which then opens up a host of problems like, is he a Gentile? He must be because he's a priest and all of that kind of thing. But you've already seen that I take a position it's not. I think there are two ways to view namesakes. One is, like many do, not most, but many, that Job lived later. And that all these names, like Temanites, etc., Buzites, etc., reflect people that came earlier. You know, a descendant of Esau is named Buz, and a descendant of Abraham is named Shua, and so forth. But it also can mean that Job lived earlier than Abraham. And in fact, those later names indicate they date back to his time and even earlier. In other words, Job may be a person that's simply in that descendancy from those original people, that original team. Understand what I'm saying here. In my family, if you run, and a lot of you, if you run a genealogy, one of the things that you find is that a lot of people have family names. That's not hard for us to understand. We're sitting here with an Ed Jr. and an Ed the Third, and an Ed the Fourth. And that happens. In my family, there are names like that. There are certain names. Edward, oddly enough, is one of those names in my family. And there's a first and a second and a third and all of that. We do that. And so what may well happen is that you're looking at names when an Abraham comes along or Nahor comes along or some of these people come along and name their kids. It's not that those guys, just because we see them roughly the first time in position in Genesis, they can easily be a later individual being named for an earlier person. I'll give you some of those names and I'll do it quickly. Here are some of the namesakes you actually see. Genesis chapter 25 and verse 2. Abraham has a son by Keturah, remember, after Sarah dies. And his name is Shua. And if you notice in here, the Shuhites. We'll talk about, all these companions of Job as we get into the book. But the Shuhites. In Genesis 22 and verse 21, Nahor, Abraham's brother, he has a son named Buzz, or Booz. That's what it sounded. But a son named Buzz, who also has a brother named Huz, incidentally. And one of the ancient spellings of Uz is, in fact, Huz. But two sons, Huz and Buzz. And they are associated with Dedan and Tema, possibly the Temanites. And I say possibly, there's two different Temas. Descendants of Abraham by Esau. Esau has a son named Eliphaz, who in turn has a descendant named Teman. So you're seeing these names crop up, and obviously Eliphaz the Temanite. Issachar, incidentally, one of the brothers there, had a son that he named Job. Now that was often forgotten. A lot of times when these arguments are being made, people go through and they say, well, you see, Eliphaz is a descendant of Esau, he's Eliphaz the Temanite, and Abraham had a grandson named Esau, who had a son named Eliphaz, who had a son or grandson named Teman. And so along comes Job, and by that time there's a whole tribe of Temanites. Well, all that's an interesting theory. But what about Issachar? Issachar is naming his son Job. And that to me is an equal indication that Job came before, not later. Notice, Issachar is a contemporary of Esau, and he's naming his kid Job. Let's stop right there. So we don't want to get into where did Job live. So when did Job live? All right. We'll stop there, and we'll go into the geography of it next time. Where in the world is the land of Uz? It's claimed to be all over the place. We'll hit that, and we'll get into next Sunday night. I'll do that, and that'll be the first half of the lesson. And then the second half of the lesson, I'll go right to Job 1, and we'll get into this whole, what to many is a very strange story of the sons of God came to present themselves, and Satan said, see, nobody's faithful to you. And God said, well, what about Abraham? So we'll get into that.